Welcome to Come and See, your podcast for finding truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. With host and founder, Richard Case, and co-host and retreat leader, Kathy Riccone. Today is our special guest day, where we will hear from a friend in the ministry who will share their insight and stories on truth in this chaotic world. And now your host, Richard Case.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is Guest Thursday, and we have a very special guest. We've had Casey Mulligan on before. He had served in Bush in the White House, and he served with Trump before, right?
Yeah, never President Bush, but definitely President Trump in the first term.
Okay, first term with Trump. And so you're an economics professor at the University of Chicago. And now you have a official position with the Trump administration again in Washington. And so why don't you first of all tell us what is your new title, which you explained to us is has interesting implications. And then we have a bunch of questions about how did it all happen. And then we got some questions for you. So tell us, first of all, what exactly are you, what's your new position with the Trump administration?
Title's called the Chief Counsel for the Office of Advocacy at the Small Business Administration. And I'm not a lawyer, and the duties are not lawyer duties. So, you know, it's government, so some of these titles are misleading. And the Small Business Administration, not really part of it. They are my landlord. In fact, my office literally leans against the Museum of the Bible. Those people familiar with
Washington. Oh, yeah, sure. That's cool.
And I was told, I was not in the office at the time, that when they built that museum, it was maybe 6 years ago, they made a hole in my office wall, but it was fixed by the time I got there.
But hey, you can make a new hole, and you just walk over and check it out. Okay, so are you still a professor at the University of Chicago, and do you have duties at the University of Chicago, or does this give you kind of a leave from that?
Well, I'm on leave. I do not have duties. I do not have paycheck or health insurance or anything like that.
Will that be basically like a sabbatical that you're on for the president for this term, and then you'll go back afterwards? Is that how that works?
Well, we take it one academic year at a time. You know, the university's on an academic calendar. I got confirmed on August 5th, which is pretty darn close to the beginning of an academic year.
Nice.
Okay. No, I was confirmed August 1st, sworn in on August 5th.
Yep. And you'll you still maintain your tenure there, right?
Yeah, that's part of the leave of absence. Yes.
That's good. Well, first of all, we know that that process is not an easy process itself. So walk us through the timeline and all the things that you had to go through just to be confirmed. How is that? Is that confirmation done? You know, is that done in the Senate? How does that work? What did you have to go through just to get them to say yes to you joining that role?
And can I ask one, add another one to that? Is this the same role you were in previously when you were in Trump's administration, or is this a new role for you there?
No, it's different. I was the chief economist of the White House Council of Economic Advisors, and our main statutory duty was to write the economic report of the president every year, which we did and very much enjoyed doing. There are people doing that now as we speak. I work with them a lot, but they have that duty. There's a lot of regulations, which we've talked about on previous shows. And I was working with the transition team. Well, what kind of role could just focus on the regulations? We kind of created an office, and then we realized, wait a second, there's an office for that. It's called the Chief Counsel for Advocacy at the Small Business Administration.
Ah, so, okay.
And it's the advantage of that office is there are some laws supporting what it's trying to do, requiring what it's trying to do. You know, in my previous role, the only law I really had was you shall write the economic report of the president. So I have a lot more laws behind me, but that's why it's a Senate confirmed. You know, the Congress writes the laws, and when they create a position with a lot of laws behind it, they want to have a say-so in who gets in there. So that had to be Senate confirmed. We knew that. The Trump administration knew that. Normally, my position is, we'll get into it. I mean, this swamp does not like people in my position. They'd rather it be empty. So typically it gets filled, maybe never, or deep into the second year. But for President Trump, it was a priority that the small businesses, they're the key part of making America great again. So he nominated me, I think, on his second or third day. He announced me on the social media even before inauguration. So the president was incredibly supportive, still is. The problem was in the Senate, and part of the problem was we did not fully anticipate the problem. We thought that we won by more, so we would have less resistance. And boy, were we wrong. The Democrats, Republicans were very supportive. For example, the president of the Senate the day I got my vote was Jim Justice, the former governor of West Virginia, now the senator from West Virginia. He's incredibly supportive. But the Democrats were in the Senate. They were setting new records on resistance. And we didn't quite realize in the Trump administration how that was playing out. What they ended up doing was confirming zero civilian nominees. I'm a civilian. Zero by voice vote. To give you an idea, there's over 1,000 civilian nominees eventually that go through the process. And President Trump, I think, has nominated 400 or so. And President Biden, President Clinton, President Bush, you name it, they had tons of those. I think not the marquee ones like the cabinet members, others, they were done by voice votes and batches of dozens, you know. So it would literally take, on a per confirmation basis, a second or two to get them confirmed.
Wow.
But the Democrats, they didn't really tell us, but they were going to do zero of those. And we weren't surprised at the more important ones that were coming first. We weren't surprised in my position. We thought they were going to risk to the step, but we thought that there would be lots of others that are quick, so the Senate would have time to debate my case. It turns out they debated every single one. So a debate takes something like 4 hours.
Wow.
The senator from Massachusetts was trashing me, but otherwise they didn't really talk about my position. The senator from Massachusetts maybe threw in 15 minutes of trashing out of the 4 hours, and they spend the other part of the 4 hours talking about other things, just burning up the clock. So we thought I would be confirmed by 1st of May or so, and it ended up being 1st of August. And that only happened when President Trump said, okay, if you guys are going slow, then you need to work weekends, no more vacations. Senate does a lot of vacations. And so I was confirmed in about 24 hours or so into their, what should have been their vacation, their summer vacation.
When you're going through that, are you present during that hearing that they're talking about you?
Yeah, there was, it's up to the Senate. You know, they get to approve or not, and they get to make the rules. And on a case-by-case basis, they did want to hear from me. So that was in March. That was not a surprise that it happened. It wasn't a surprise how they played out. There's not a lot of original thinking, especially on the attack side. I knew they were going to try to use me to criticize President Trump. They were going to try to use me to criticize Doge. Totally expected, totally prepared for. So I was very happy with the process. If you watch the video, you can see my daughter sitting behind me, Julia sitting there. We had fun.
What did you have to do to prepare?
Well, I mean, there's nothing really required to prepare my mind for it. Now, there's all kind of paperwork, and the FBI comes and talks to my neighbors. There's a little confusion that one of my neighbors has the same name as my previous neighbor who died.
Oh, no.
So we had fun with that. But there's that kind of paperwork in the preparation. Because my office kind of sits on its own, we kind of prepared on our own. And what I did is I used some AI to gather the confirmations of the cabinet members who do similar things that I do. And then I had a kind of dialogue. Well, what's the common theme that they talk about and that the Democrats attack on and stuff like that? And so I have watched a bunch of that play out and told myself, you know, oh, I'm going to do it like she did or like he did, or I'm going to turn over here when they try to talk about Doge and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what does that look like? So were you fully as a professor while you were doing all of this then? Or did you gears? How does that play out? Because that's a lot. That's a lot.
Well, it was a little awkward and unfair. I think, you know, we thought I would be confirmed, you know, May 1st. Mm-hmm. And normally I would have a class from roughly April 1st into June. And we had talked, you know, with UChicago administration, well, what should we do about this? Should we try to squeeze the class into a few months? You know, what if I get confirmed, then I have to leave? You know, I can't work there anymore. You know, would that be fair to the kids and things? So we end up canceling my class at the last minute. We didn't have to because I was confirmed in not until August. So that was a disappointment. I love teaching those classes, so I didn't like it. The students were disappointed. My actual hearing in the Senate, and when we brought the kids and stuff, that was more or less during spring break. So we didn't really interrupt classes for me or the kids, for that matter.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now that you're in that position, what's your cadence between Washington and back in Chicago? How do you operate with, you know, in one place and then another? And I'm assuming Julia and the kids are still back in Chicago fundamentally. How does that all
work?
Yeah,
I mean, that's another thing that's kind of unfair, that, you know, we didn't know how long this was going to go on. Once we realized the game that was being played, we didn't know how long it was going to go on. So they couldn't sign up for any schools or anything in Washington. You know, we had them all sign up for their normal schools. You know, is there a cadence yet? We're in a shutdown right now. So that's not a cadence, and it's even a little more confusing than that, because my office is not shut. Congress did a lot to keep my office separate from the political process. So every one of my employees is working 100%. Now, you know, what do we do? There's plenty to do. In fact, it's not real good, I don't think, but there are plenty of agencies that are open because they get their own money by more or less slapping fines on ordinary people and businesses, so they can stay open. They don't need the new congressional money. And so I do work with them. It's a bit of ironic. I'm able to work with them because of that money, and I want to tell them, stop doing that.
That's so funny. That is funny.
So there's a cadence there. And my landlord, 100% closed. So I've been in Illinois maybe more than normal, because there's not stuff going on, especially on a Friday, even a Thursday, except in my office. And unlike last time I was in Washington, we have Zoom and all that stuff. So
yeah.
So I'm not sure there's a cadence yet. We'll see.
Yeah. When it comes back, everything's back to normal, what do you think it'll be like for you and Julia and the kids? How will all that work?
And how old are your kids again, if you don't mind me asking?
The oldest is 27. He's got a busy job. The second is 24. He has a busy job as well. Then there's Johnny, he's in college. He's supposed to be busy with homework, but it's not in our house, you know. So there's only girls at home now, Julia and daughters, and they're in 7th grade and 9th grade.
Okay.
Yeah. So how do you think, when it gets back to normal, how do you think that'll all, what will be your back and forth, or will they come to Washington?
Well, we'll see what's happening so far. That could easily continue, I would think. I'm home half the nights, almost exactly. Some weeks I come home on Thursday night, and others on Friday night, and then I come back first flight Monday morning. It's from Midway. I hope in our show you don't get interrupted by airplanes. I'm really close to the airport here, 9 minutes. So it's very easy. It's not tiring on me. So that ends up being exactly half the nights. But,
yeah.
You know, it depends. You know, kids, things change and stuff. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be praying for that, to have it. And then is it, given that you're in this position, is it likely that you would...
I forgot to mention the other part. I don't have a lot of employees. I don't, you know, and some agencies have $1 trillion with a T. I don't have $1 billion with a B, not even close. But my secret really is listening to the small businesses. So I have at least 25% of my employees are not in Washington.
Yeah.
They are out in the country, listening to the small businesses, visiting them, cold calling them. Mm. It's part of my job is to go out and participate in that. I was just in Whedon on Tuesday. So I was home. I mean, the kids were at school and I was at Whedon at small businesses, but I was home on Tuesday this week as well. So that's another part of the job that was not before I was in the White House. That's my only work, was right there. You know, I didn't even travel to another building, let alone into the country.
Yeah. Will you, in this position, since it's a, you know, confirmed position, is it likely that you would be in the entire term? You would serve it the entire term?
Well, you know, Chicago's on academic years, so, and the political process is not, it's more closer to a calendar year, right? So I don't know exactly how that'll play out. And my position's been empty. People are not even used to the position, so we'll see how the position adapts and what people need and what my family needs. And
so what exactly is your, like, what do you what do you do? What are you really looking to accomplish in your position now?
Well, the first task is listening. That's the secret part. I'm hearing stuff from outside of Washington, and most of the other offices are only hearing it from inside of Washington. And guess what? In Washington, they don't know a lot.
Yeah.
Your listeners are not going to be surprised. So it's a little overwhelming. In fact, every time I go out, I'm hearing serious problems. And it's not like President Trump is not all over a whole bunch of serious problems, but I hear even additional serious problems that haven't come on his radar. And so, you know, I'm bringing that back. It's a target-rich environment. It shouldn't be that way, but it is a target-rich. I can randomly walk down Main Street Whedon or an Iowa State Fair or you name it, and somebody's going to tell me, wow, that is a real problem. Now I understand the part of the government that's causing that. And the White House and the people in Washington are not aware. I'm going to make them aware. So that's the first part, the listening.
Great.
Now, the people who suffer from these problems, they are not aware of the mechanics of the government, of how it might be fixed. Who do you approach to fix it? You know, is it Congress? Is it the administration? What's the problem? And so we interface that part. I'm pretty good at recognizing the esoteric part of the government that's responsible once I kind of hear the issue. And then when I'm in Washington, I'm meeting with those different agencies or the cabinet members and saying, well, you know, your agency's been causing this problem for years. Small businesses really want you to fix it up, you know, and I have to be convincing. Ideally, I convince them. You know, maybe I have to go to the White House and say, you know, one of your cabinet members is not really dealing with this problem or not dealing with it fast enough. And so I try to make allies that way. So there's an internal politics part of the job and then the external listening. Then we have a research group. That would be the third thing that we do. They're tied together because the laws that are behind me require research into any new rule, how it affects the small businesses, their economics. So that's part of the law. The government doesn't follow it. So traditionally, I'm putting a stop to that. So I have economists, and we were analyzing the economics of a lot of these different rules. So that's really the three parts of it. And there's certainly gray areas between all three of them.
Yeah. Are you getting receptivity to these by these different agencies that need to change what they're doing?
Yeah, if I take everybody literally, for sure. The Environmental Protection Agency has been resistant. Administrator Zeldin is great, but it's a massive agency. A lot of employees have been around there, maybe aren't fans of President Trump, and so I'm still not totally satisfied on turning that. There's a lot more time to go. But aside from the Environmental Protection Agency, the other agency has been very enthusiastic to help. You know, it's politics, so people say things and they don't mean it and stuff like that. So there needs to be follow-up.
What, given that you've done the listening, what are your, you know, top three or four initiatives right now that's on the, you know, forefront of what you're up to? What are some of those topics that we want to, in our next session, come back and talk about those a little bit? But what are they?
Well, maybe number one or up there is the and you guys know, you've done this, payroll forms. Every employer must file a quarterly payroll form, 941.
Yeah.
Has to be done every quarter. And it's the same amount of paperwork for a one-person employer as it is for Walmart. So it's, you know, the burden is overwhelmingly sits on the smaller businesses. And we have 36 million small businesses. Maybe not all of them have employees, but many millions of small businesses doing this quarterly form. It's not the deposit. The deposit's a separate thing, as you may remember. When you deposit the money for your FICA or whatever your employees you're withholding. My business, yours may do it monthly. My businesses did it within 3 days of making the payroll. So that's a totally separate thing. So I'm not talking about the Treasury not getting their money. I might be interested in that too, but this is a separate thing. Like, do we have to file the form four times a year? Why not once a year?
Right.
And so part of what I did on the research side is digging into it. Well, how did it become this way? Who's responsible for it? You know, you kind of think that, well, probably Congress put a law that said there should be a 941, there should be every quarter. No, Congress never said anything about this. It was a lower level person at the Treasury many years ago who said we're doing it quarterly. And we're having that form, we're doing it quarterly. So that's almost a billion hours a year spent on that darn form. So I'd like to cut that back to once a year, and I have some ideas to cut it back even more, combine it with some other forms. So that would be a big deal for small businesses. You know, the big ones wouldn't notice. There's a lot of, you know, that's legal what the Treasury did. I'm not going to criticize its legality. It's not smart policy, I don't think. There's a lot of illegal, unlawful policies. You know, the Congress said it's supposed to be done this way, and they don't. So there's, I don't know, it's a policy, but it's a theme, particularly around environmental, so-called environmental things. We have a policy. So I'll give you an example. It's not a trivial example, but it's an example. You know, in Genesis chapter 1, it says, God said we will have dominion over the fish. No, that's not how it works. The fish have dominion, the fish have dominion over us. Now, and it, actually, the Genesis 1, also Genesis, I believe it's 3, not long after, it says, the fish will be your food. A lot of the creatures will be, but it specifically right. points to the fish. And there, we have a law in the United States, I believe it goes back to the 30s, certainly older than me, called the Magnuson-Stevens Act, that more or less says what Genesis says, that we're to manage the fisheries. And here I'm referring to the ocean. This law refers to the ocean. We manage the fisheries for the industry to thrive and be for a long period of time. So you don't want to run out of fish in the first couple of years. So it's for the industry to thrive and for people to eat, ultimately, right? The fishing industry, you know, has a whole manufacturing process so that it can come to your Costco freezer, you know, or refrigerator or whatever. So, and the bureaucrats aren't doing it that way. And some of them are even honest. They're like, yeah, we don't care that the law says that. This is for the fish or the environment, whatever that means. So our fishermen have been treated very badly. We're comparing to the law. We're comparing to the Bible. We can compare to other countries, too. So many countries, whether you say Canada or China or Iceland, they get so much more fish out of so much less water because they are allowed to have dominion over the fish. You know, we're not.
That's interesting.
And this is a theme I see it in other areas where the animals, the plants have dominion over us. It's gotten out of hand. You know, it's forgotten, you know, what the whole purpose and the whole hierarchy in life is. And this is bureaucracy moving, you know. It gets captured by, we could call them environmental groups, whatever's motivating them to have the fish live a wonderful life. And the small businesses suffer from that the most. I mean, these regulations on the fishermen are regulation upon regulation upon regulation, totally duplicative. Fishermen can't earn a living. It's unsafe,
Well, we want to, in our next session, come back and talk a little bit more about that, about now that you have identified that, we'd love to hear how do you approach that, given that you're dealing with a bureaucracy, because that's our big question. And then we have, obviously, some more questions about the economy. So, Casey, it's fun to know what you went through and God put you in this spot and what you're up to. We are rejoicing, you know, that you have that position, and just keep praying for you, Father, that you would give Casey and his team just great wisdom and insight and what steps to take to smooth out the opportunities for small business, particularly in America, that would benefit the economy and benefit them and the employees. And so we just thank you for his heart and for what you've done in his life. May you continue to give him joy with with Julia and his kids, and that this becomes truly a life that he thoroughly steps into. And we praise you in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Casey. It is always a pleasure just to have your expertise on here and to just see what God's doing in your life, too. Yeah. So thanks for that. Listeners, if you have questions, send them in to us at questions@abideministries.com. And be sure to tune in next Thursday as we continue this conversation with Casey.
Yes, absolutely.
We'll see you next time.
Yep. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Come and See, your podcast for truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. Send us your questions and comments and tune in tomorrow for more answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. Remember, God's will is best and none better. His truth brings peace in this world of chaos.